Another week is on the books, and more best things have come to light. What's your best thing this week?
I haven't had any time to read it all. It's been a really crazy fall, and I finally went to the bookstore and bought a new book, and I started reading it, and it's really good. I got Lena Dunham's new book. It's called Not That Kind of Girl. So that's been the best thing so far this week.
Very nice.
Yeah.
To contradict that thing that you did that's good for your brain, my best thing is that Gilmore Girls has been added to Netflix.
Do you like Gilmore Girls?
Yeah, I do.
The acting's so bad.
I know. It is. I know it is. I don't know why I like it.
To each their own.
I just do.
Yeah. You don't have to say why, man. You just love it. It's great. Speaking of love, I don't go to a ton of weddings, but this last weekend I was at the wedding of a very longtime dear family friend, and it was beautiful, and I was like, okay, there is some good in the world. All right. So that was just the best thing. I was sitting there at this wedding, and I was like, oh, my God.
That's
just
nice.
A mess. Yeah, it was wonderful. It was just wonderful.
An open bar?
Yes, there was an open
Perfect.
Bar, and there was an open bar the night before.
Awesome.
And I'm not drinking again for a while, so all is well.
Happy you could make it here
yeah.
today, Alex.
I'm bright and chipper.
Good. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is podcast time. We have some stuff to talk about today, don't we?
I think so.
Hell yeah. We probably could have a pretty wild discussion about gender roles. I recently read a book that touches on a lot of, you know, gender issues in a very pop, digestible kind of way, and I just wanted to, you know, kick off a little discussion, see what we have to say.
So I told you guys that I went to go buy that book, but that was only after I tried for 2 hours to download it on an e-reader and couldn't figure it out. So I want to talk about e-reader culture and what that is doing for the literary world.
My name's Alex Goderud.
And I'm Tess Weinberg.
I'm Shelby Thomason.
Let's pop till we drop. Last week, I checked out a book from the library that I had read some interesting reviews of earlier this summer. It's called Adam. It's by an author named Ariel Schrag, and it is a novel that is kind of an interesting midpoint between your sort of YA fiction for adults, meaning it's, there's a lot of like romance stuff, but it's very graphic, and then also some social commentary about gender roles, gender norms, and specifically the plot of the book is this sort of down on his luck, nerdy high school kid visits his sister in New York for a summer and realizes, and this is a very specific setup, that there were people who wanted to date him because they thought he was a transgender man. So he's pretending to be transgender over the course of the summer and learning all about, you know, the trans community, you know, gender roles, stereotypes, that kind of thing. And it was this well-written, easily accessible, and genuinely informative look at gender roles, the transgender community, how teenagers learn about themselves in a time when, you know, many more people easily identify as transgender than in previous generations. You know, I mean, it's written essentially from the perspective of a 17-year-old who doesn't know anything about gender as a topic.
17-year-old boy.
Boy.
Who's pretending to be
a transgender man. Yes. And, you know, he knows nothing. He is sort of, you know, someone mistakes him for transgender, and then it's up to him to kind of educate himself. And in the process, you know, the reader, who could be anyone from a kid at the library to, you know, someone browsing the racks at Barnes & Noble, because it is a pretty widely available mass market novel, could learn a thing or two from it. And I thought it was an interesting approach to, you know, my first, like, gender discussion was in, like, a critical theory class in college. And it was very nice to see a well-written, clear option for people to discuss things like pronouns and transitioning in a very mass audience.
Well, I just got a new job about a month ago where we don't actually use pronouns, common pronouns.
Okay.
It was kind of surprising to me, mostly because, like you, my first discussion about gender pronouns, gender roles, like a real deep discussion about it and how it fluctuates between person, was not until college. And so it's kind of a recent thing in my life. And now it's even come to the forefront even more because we don't use, you know, he or she to describe anybody, we use them, or, you know, refer to that person as, like, with their name, or, you know, with anything other than a gender-specific pronoun, mostly because I work for an LGBT choir, and so a lot of those singers don't actually subscribe to, or would prefer not to subscribe to, the gendered system.
Interesting. Was that a learning curve for you?
You know, it took a couple days to get used to, mostly because our language is designed to engender bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while for my grammatical brain to wrap around it, because them no longer was a plural pronoun. It was just the pronoun that we use for everything.
So with people outside of the organization, are they expected to adhere to that as well?
No. Well, the thing about it is that as staff people, we are very sensitive to that, but we expect that other people won't be. And so part of the mission, in a very small way, of the organization is to educate people as to how gendered their life is and whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, it's arguable, but a lot of times people will come in and they assume, you know, that a transgender man or a transgender woman goes by a specific, like, he or she, when they might not go by either, or they would go by the opposite of what you assume. I mean, you know, because a lot of, like, butch lesbians are referred to as he when they, you know, when a guest is coming into the choir, and they don't refer to themselves as that. Mm-hmm. They would much rather prefer she or them.
I think it's interesting because it's not just English that's a language that subscribes to engendering bodies.
No.
You know, it's with all languages, and especially I think about Spanish and all of those conjugations are male and female, but
I think
it can't just
arguably
be.
Arguably, those languages are more engendered.
Yeah, and it can't just be people who speak English or, like, you know, Americans who have people who don't identify with the gender. So I think, you know, thinking about that internationally is really interesting.
Well, I think the world is engendered.
Well, yeah.
Which, is that a good or bad thing?
I don't
or
know.
Or neither.
I mean, I
feel like the answer is kind of yes, but also, I mean, gender serves a purpose at some point. There are very negative things that happen in the world as a result of gender roles and, you know, so-called gender differences or whatever. But it's one of those things that I think we're making some progress toward undoing a little of the damage.
Yeah.
Even at a very slow pace and, like, a frustrating pace.
Yeah, at least within our generation, I see it culturally shifting a little bit, at least between people who do identify with a certain gender. I feel like those gender roles that are traditionally given to men and women are lessening, which I'm okay with. Like, for some reason, the last few guys I've dated have all been really good at cooking, and that's something that I really like, because traditionally that's a role that's given to a woman. I can't cook for shit. So I think, like, for me, that's awesome. Like, I'm really attracted to people who, like, want to make something special for me, and, you know, like, that's something that I find really attractive in a man. So I think, like, you know, on a very surface level, those cultural gender roles are something that are really being crossed, which I think is a positive thing. And I think before, you know, I have a few vintage books on my bookshelf that are how to make a happy home, or, like, how to live a healthy life. And they're anywhere from the 1920s to the 1960s. And they're very interesting to read, but extremely misguided in what our current perceptions are. And I really enjoy reading them just for the pure contrast of it, you know? And it's like, I think now, being able to be attracted to a man who doesn't necessarily have the qualities that we've liked to deem as manly in the past, and vice versa for men and women, like, I think that that's such a step in the right direction.
I think it's pretty widely accepted that gender roles being designated to you based on your sex. I mean, granted, there are, like, some people, you know, of whatever, a very, very conservative viewpoint that think women do have to be the homemaker and men have to be the protector. But I think that, like, our society in general has accepted that that's a bad thing. And I think the thing that is being discussed is whether or not we should subscribe to gender roles at all or not have them.
And the idea of masculine and feminine is similar to gender, 95% made up.
Right.
You know, we drew a line, we drew two columns, and we just assigned adjectives to like one side or the other,
right,
masculine
right.
and feminine, and came up with traits that largely don't match anymore. And I think part of the reason we're making some progress now is that because our society is so capitalist and so money driven, and so, you know, everybody just thinks in kind of economic terms on like a macro society level. And because women have made such great successes in leveling the economic playing field, providing more for themselves and for their families, making decisions that are sort of seizing control of their economic destinies, all of a sudden the rest of society is sort of reshaping itself to fit this vision of like women who are able to take women who really don't need men anymore, which is how, you know, society structured itself for however many thousands of years. And that's the most positive development.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a man, so I see only
right.
the
I mean,
like,
I wonder,
I
like,
don't, I haven't seen the struggle, only like the results, you know?
I think that like all gender roles really are like, the other day a guy held a door open for me, and I like that. Like, I like when a guy holds a door open for me, but I also like when a woman holds a door open for me. Like, I think it's just
yeah.
a nice
right.
thing to do.
You like
don't
when
slam
a human holds
when a
the door.
I like
yeah.
when a human
right.
offers to hold the door open for me. And I think that's really what gender roles are. It's like, it's really just different modes of showing you care about someone
sure.
on varying scales. And so, but you know, we've applied them to men and women now, and then having that yin and yang system of how those things match up. But it's really just about people.
People
generally.
Being nice to each
just
other.
Just people being
sure.
nice to each other.
Yeah.
A couple days ago, my boyfriend referred to me as feminine and a princess, which was weird to me because I don't necessarily subscribe to either of those words. But and he's not wrong. He's not right. It was just what he thought. And it was odd to be confronted with a gender norm that I didn't realize I embodied.
Yeah, I also think, you know, with that being said, women who are called feminine or masculine, it's usually meant in offensive, like someone's trying to be
right.
offensive when
yeah.
they say those words. And
yeah.
it's like, I think we should get rid of that, you know, by
identifying.
Well,
I didn't take offense. And I don't know if that's kind of where you're going with that, because I don't think either one is offensive.
They're not offensive words, right?
Right?
But people mean to say them. I'm not saying your boyfriend is trying
right.
to offend you, but
oh,
generally
no.
when people say that, you know, they're trying to make a point
right.
that is offensive
right.
generally.
Yeah.
But those aren't offensive words. It's just humans, you know, it's like the whole thing with all of gender roles is it's really just the common denominator is that we're all just humans and we
mm-hmm.
all have characteristics. And I don't necessarily think gender roles are bad. And I the other day on Twitter, a girl who I follow tweeted, "No, mom and dad, gender roles are dead," or something. And they're not
oh,
because they still
that's
exist.
That's not true.
They still exist in the world. And I don't know if they're necessarily a bad thing because I think that the way that I see them is that it's people caring for one another. And so if it's a man caring for a man or a woman caring for a woman or a man and a woman, it doesn't matter, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable expectation for the future, is just like a world in which you can be just really who you are and find someone who really makes you happy without having to fit into, you know, I do the cooking and, you know, he makes the money or whatever, you
mm-hmm.
know? I think we're
or
well.
Or be happy with yourself.
Yeah, or just be happy. Hey, good call. Yes.
I think there
be
are
happy
a lot of people
yourself.
Out there who now no longer want themselves to be identified in any way regarding another person. Like, I have friends who think that, you know, they probably never will be with anybody and they don't want to be defined by who they will be with.
Sure.
Right.
That is a topic for another day. That's.
It's a huge topic.
That's pretty great.
Millennial, and I have a tablet that was gifted to me, and it was gifted to me so I could read books on it. Why are you laughing at
me? I just thought that the gifted to me part was but that is very millennial. I was
millennial.
Gifted my tablet. I never thought of it that way.
See? So I, as a millennial, I guess I should know how to download books onto mm-hmm. a tablet. And this weekend I had a little bit of extra time. I was really excited about it. It was a beautiful weekend. It's like, I'm going to read a new book. I'm going to start a new book. So I spent two entire hours of my one day off Sunday trying to download a book. That was the most frustrating thing ever. And I was like, you know what? My friend has this book. She should just loan it to me. So I called her up. Hey, Stacy, can I borrow your book? And she's like, no, girlfriend, it's on my tablet. So you can't have it. And I was like, you know, this is not how the world used to work, okay? You used to be able to lend me your book that was dog-eared and written all over it, and we could have shared this experience together. So, you know, then I went to the bookstore and bought the book, whatever. But I couldn't help but think, like, this is diminishing, like, the shared literary culture. Like, this is not the direction that literature should be going in.
You can't do a little free library on your Kindle.
No.
Maybe there's a way to, like, jailbreak it or whatever, but it's such a weird intersection of, like, all of a sudden copyrights are so much more important, because you can't, you know, you just can't share anything. You have to pay someone,
right.
I respect. Artists should get paid.
Yeah, the thing that I thought about when you first brought this up was the fact that, yeah, books can't be, you know, handed down anymore. They can't, you know, you can't borrow a book from your friend. You can't hold the book. You can't write in the book. You don't get to have the book on your shelf, which I think is a really cultural capital kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then I also thought about the fact that, like, well, you went to go buy the book. Now you've purchased the book.
Right.
And that author has received the money from the book purchase. Although, I mean, it's probably kind of like music, where every time somebody buys a book, you as the author might get 10 cents of that book, might get 10 cents of that sale.
Well, especially for modern authors, if you're only getting 10 cents from the hardcover book that I bought, it's almost better to have a version of a book that you can share with multiple people and spread the word of what you're doing. And, you know, I think it's better to have something that's actually shareable. It's like, why wouldn't you want your art to be shared?
There's a pretty great, I forget which website or magazine it was in, but it was a story by an author who had written an ebook, because that's, you know, that's like a valid career course for a lot of authors now, is to write, you know, a long form journalism piece or write an ebook, or it's a lot easier to get into now, certainly, and become a published author than it was 10 years ago. Anyone can do it. But this piece was about, like, I am a published author. I have written books. Like, I know what it is like. So I wrote an ebook just to do it. And, you know, I was promised all this money by, you know, the publisher, the e-publisher or whatever. And this person sold literally thousands of copies of this ebook and made like $400 or something. It was this wild tale of, it's kind of like you hear about Spotify all the time. It's like my band was played 100,000 times and I got $3.80 for it. It's that kind of like, what is art worth in the digital age?
Right.
Which is why I value, you know, paper books so
actually
much more.
Actually getting to hold it.
And even though I don't like paying $38
for
a hardcover. For
hardcover, I know.
Just saying.
Well, and I think that's kind of what's going on, is that we're taught to be satisfied with all of these artistic loaning sites. You know, with Spotify, you can listen to music and make playlists, but that's not really your music. You're being loaned that music because you pay a premium every month. Same with that Oyster downloading service.
Right,
you know, it's $10 a month. You get loaned these books. You're downloading them. They feel like yours. You're having that shared experience of reading it. You're getting to know the characters, but it's not yours. That's not yours. It's not going on your shelf. You don't get to own it. And for me, when I read a book, like, I want to be able to own it. I want to be able to give it to whoever I want. I want to, you know, be able to share that experience with someone of my choosing, not be, you know, tied down to a plastic thing.
Well, I also wonder
digital.
If the reason that you couldn't share the digital book is just because you don't know yet how to share the digital book.
Because I'm too stupid to figure out how to download it.
No. That's not what I mean. Because, like, digital books have not been around for our generation long enough for the common people of our generation.
But you still have to have that utility to, you know, to be able to download it.
I mean, the thing is like, I don't know that. We don't really know that. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of books that I could probably download just on my computer. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, the download aspect of it does not mean that you can't share it, which the only reason that I thought digital books might be good is because you couldn't share it with a friend, and so then you had to buy it. Because, like, you know, then the author gets the author gets what they deserve.
Right,
which
forcing
is,
the commerce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, I think it's just because we know I could download any music I wanted to, truly any music I wanted to.
especially if a friend of mine already had it.
Right.
Like, oh, like the ease is unreal. Yeah. I could just get it immediately.
Zip drive.
A book I couldn't do that with because I don't really know how. And I don't know. I don't really care. Like, it's just never, I don't know. But eventually I think we will be able to. So that, you know, negates that problem of like, you can't really share it. Like, you can. It's just, so then it comes down to the fact that it's like a digital copy, which I hate. I don't have a tablet. I don't want a tablet. Mm-hmm. I never want to read a book on a screen. I think that's awful. I hate it. Like, I want a book because, yeah, you get to hold it. You get to own it. You get to write in it. You get to give it away. You get to take it back.
I don't know.
It's yours. It's like a physical
thing. It becomes a part of you.
Thing. Yeah. And I don't know if it's like nostalgia, because we were talking about this before, Tess, of like the romance of a book. And I said, you know, music really isn't that romantic anymore. And you totally disagreed because the vinyl thing, which I totally get. But for me, a book is so romantic and so nostalgic because when I grew up, I had books. Mm-hmm. I didn't have vinyl. I had CDs, and I think CDs are ugly. Yeah. I think vinyl is beautiful. Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's because I think old things are great because I'm a middle class person who grew up with antique shops. I don't know. I think old things are great and nostalgic and romantic and awesome. So vinyl is great, but it's not part of my childhood, like my growing up.
Well,
and books are.
I think like, you know, so much of everything we do is so digital. Like, all of my work is on a computer. All of my music is on a computer. So to be able to have those things that are actually tangible, to be like, no, I spent $35 on this hardcover book, and I know that that will take up space in my life until I decide to not have it anymore. And same with vinyl. It's like, that is a conscious choice I am making as a consumer to own this. And it is so much more comforting than downloading a bunch of shit on a tablet.
And I will say, you're kind of stuck with it. If you you have so many, have 2 tons of records or whatever, or you have like 9 boxes of books, you're stuck with it.
That is your burden to bear.
Yeah, and you have to engage with it. Mm-hmm. So everyone in my family is a big reader, and I like have inherited all these old books from my dad. Then, you know, they just, as far as I knew, they were just like his books that he read at one point or another. So I just have stacks and stacks and stacks of them, and I go through and pick one on occasion. So I was reading this book a couple months ago, and I just kind of assumed that he had picked them up places, you know, at a flea market or whatever when he was in college or what have you. So I'm going through and I'm reading this book, and I got to the end of it, and there are all these little red pen notes throughout, like, this person read this book and was underlining it and like commenting on the pages and, you know, sort of interacting with this. I mean, really like reading this book, and for the record, did not like this book. This person left me very clear notes. And I had this sneaking suspicion. So I was like, Dad, is this your book? And he looked at it and he was like, oh yeah, I read that in college. I hated it. And I was like, I could tell because you underlined a huge quote and you wrote like flat ass lie. And what have you. So this was literally like my young dad was like alive in this book. You can't do that on an e-reader.
No. And I think that that's beautiful. Like nobody should ever buy digital books because like you can't.
You can't do that. It ruins books. I mean.
But then, okay, on the other hand, just playing devil's advocate, like, you could read 30 books in a month and have it only cost $10, you know? Like, you can actually become much more knowledgeable about the world. So it's like, is it really doing harm to have a lot of access to knowledge? Like, I don't know. Like, I support both.
I used to feel that way, and I was very, like, I got an iPad, and I was kind of like, I'm never going to download an ebook. Like, no. And for the record, I still never have. But I eventually realized that I could just, like, I could go back to the library, you know? And I hadn't,
However, like, it takes time, it takes energy, it takes capital to go back to the library. Like, I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, but you have to buy the tablet. You have to first get a hold of the tablet. So is it really accessible? Because that's a pretty pricey item. But, like, because then my argument for that was going to be the library is free. However, you also have to have a lot of free time to go to the library.
No, there are a lot of libraries, though.
Right, but you have to have a time during the working day when the library is open that you do not have to be at work.
Right.
Which I think is very limited for a lot of people.
I very briefly, after getting the iPad, I said no books, went to the library for a little bit, and then I read an article in the New York Times about how people were getting, and this may freak some people out, we're getting bed bugs from library books because bed bugs can, like, lay eggs in the glue of the spine.
Okay, that is...
And you bring a book into your home.
Gross.
And I freaked out. I deleted my library list. I said, I'm never going back. I'm never going back.
Oh,
and
man.
Then about 2 weeks later, I was like, you know what? I've already been to the library a bunch and it hasn't happened. So,
give a statistic? Like, how often does that happen?
I don't... It was just, like, a thing that had been happening, you know? Libraries across the country had been having...
Had been transferring
bed bugs, and I was lying there in bed.
I don't know
just
about
like,
that,
no,
man.
No.
I've had a bed bug situation in my apartment before, and it was not my fault. Just like FYI, but like it was not cool. It was not cool, and it was gross.
Sure, my roommate's cats had fleas once, and it was like one of the like oh boy, it was an incredibly stressful situation.
Well, the thing about it is like it's not even. I mean, the flea thing. I don't know if that's the cat's fault or like the roommate's fault. I don't know, the bed bugs thing. It just happens like random. It's like random. Yeah. Like it just strikes.
It was your library
like
books.
Where this conversation is going. It's
I'm sorry.
So
I'm sorry
gross.
To hear about. I'm
so,
sorry
like,
to
books.
To rain
so
on.
So books, you know.
I'm sorry to let you know that these books could be bringing.
That's all we can offer you. Pop till we drop, listeners. Bed bugs, fleas, and books.
Still, even after finding that out, still no ebooks on my iPad. So
I stayed
strong.
I'll still go get books. I'll still go to the library.
I was at the library last week, and I've been bed bug free this whole time. So, F you, New York Times, that
you
alarmist
were wrong.
Publication.